Hello and welcome to the American Writers Museum Author Talks podcast, where we bring the power of the written word straight to your ears. This week, tune into the panel discussion, Making Up True Stories, Novels and Books About Real People. Our featured writers are Amanda Flower, Sarah James, Brianna Labuscus, and Brianna Media, moderated by Topeka Majuria. The following conversation originally took place May 19th, 2024, and was recorded live at the American Writers Festival.
Welcome to the next program, Making Up True Stories. Our featured writers have all tackled the tricky problem of how to take real events and make them into stories, whether in fiction or memoir. Amanda Flower is the USA Today best-selling and Agatha Award-winning mystery author of over 25 novels, including the Emily Dickinson Mysteries and To Slip the Bonds of Earth, about Wilbur and Orville Wright's younger sister. Sarah James is the international best-selling author of The Woman with Two Shadows and Last Night at the Hollywood Canteen. Brianna Labuscus is the Washington Post best-selling author of The Lost Book of Bond, the librarian of Burn Books, as well as eight thrillers. New York Times best-selling author Brianna Madia's memoir, Never Leave the Dogs Behind, tells the story of a woman's independence and isolation as she moves to the Southwest with no one but her four beloved dogs. This panel is moderated by Deepika Mukherjee, novelist and author of the recent writer's Postcards. Welcome to you all.
Thank you, Noelle, and welcome, everybody. And it's just one of these gorgeous Chicago days, right? One of the best in summer. So I really appreciate you all being indoors with us all, with these fabulous writers, some of whom have flown far to be here today with us. So welcome, all fabulous writers. And I would like to get you all started by asking you to tell us a little bit about the genesis of this particular book that you're going to be talking about today, and what inspired you, if you could talk a little bit about that, and talk a little bit about how long it took you to write the book, which is often an issue with many writers. So let's
begin. Apparently not Amanda.
Not Amanda, yes. So does Amanda want to begin?
My name is Amanda Flower, and my book was To Slip the Bonds of Earth, which is the first in the Catherine Wright mystery series about Orville and Wilbur Wright's younger sister, who was the silent third party in their success to be the first in flight. And she did so many things to help them be successful. And I am a mystery author by trade. I've written over 53 novels. And so I figure, let's kill someone and send Catherine after them that involves the first flight. So it starts on December 1903 when the boys fly for the first time. And I call them the boys because that's what Catherine called them, even though she was the younger sister. And how long it took me to write it, I am on a very aggressive schedule where I write four books a year. So it took me about 3 months.
Wow. Well done, you.
I'll go next because mine is actually a little bit similar in genesis to Amanda's, which is my second book. It's called Last Night at the Hollywood Canteen. It's set in World War II in Old Hollywood in Los Angeles, and it's about a club that really existed for servicemen called the Hollywood Canteen, where servicemen could go and dance and hang out with movie stars. And similar to Amanda, I found out about this place and was like, what if someone died there? So that was the genesis of my book. I think I spent about a year writing it. I don't type as fast, I guess.
Wonderful.
My latest is The Lost Book of Bond, and I actually came up with the idea while I was researching my debut, The Librarian of Burn Books, and I found this nonfiction book about the burnings, and of course that was important, but the point the author made was that the more insidious thing was that they looted all of these private libraries and research libraries, and they hoarded the books. So at the end of the war, there were millions of books about, you know, the Yiddish culture, just Poland, like every culture that they kind of went in and looted the entire culture. And the Monuments Men had an effort to return these books to their original owners. And sometimes that was research libraries, but sometimes it was personal people. And so there is a story about the author of this book found a book that had never been returned. And so he tracked down this man's granddaughter. The man had died in the Holocaust, and he returned the book, this personal book with writing, from the grandfather to the granddaughter. And I just found that such a powerful story. And so then I kind of wrote a book about around that idea. So, it took me like 6 months.
Okay, well, none of my books have ever taken me 3 or 6 months. My most recent book is called Never Leave the Dogs Behind. It is a memoir, so it's, I'm a little bit of the left fielder up here. I research myself. But it's about, I went through a difficult divorce and I moved down to the desert and bought 9 acres of land and sort of became the crazy lady up on the hill with 4 dogs and sort of walking the line between finding my independence versus realizing how much I was isolating myself because I was just sort of beaten down by the world. Just living up there and sort of brought a confidence back to myself that I think was really pertinent. And honestly, I'm never not writing,
right.
if
yeah.
that makes sense.
Yeah,
so I don't know. I mean, I feel like as soon as I finished my first book, I just started the second one. So 2 years.
2 years?
Yeah.
Okay, all
so
right.
So Amanda, tell me how you do it.
I know. I'm totally with you, Brianne. You know, I mean, I'm also like, I wrote a book that I basically researched myself and yes. my travels, and
yeah.
so yeah, I'm on your team,
yeah.
absolutely. And I'm also absolutely awed by people who can write in 3 months. I mean, amazing. So I'm going to actually lob the next story to Bree M, because do you have any friends left since you're writing about your real life? Have you ever found it a problem to write about real life people? Because the others have all written about real people who are dead.
Yes.
But we will get to that question as well.
Yes. They just come after
first
us.
You.
It's
going to
be a lot
yeah.
scarier. Yeah, it's definitely a risk. I have lost relationships that didn't really my dad was pretty upset about the mm-hmm. first book, and so we had sort of a difficult relationship to begin with,
mm-hmm.
and that was that sort of solidified, I think, the end of it, which was hard, but it also sort of brought me a sense of peace because he read the book, I think, mm-hmm. and if he didn't understand then, there's nothing left to say, sort of, so
right.
And then also just writing about my ex and things like that was, I tried, even though it was very fresh, I tried to think, like, how do I want to feel about this in the future? How am I going to look back on this book in 10 years and be the bigger person, sort of, and, like, tell the truth but not make it some sort of a smear campaign? So that's, like, a fine line to walk. So the drafts get progressively less angry.
Oh, yeah, I hear you. And I think Anne Lamott, which you know, some of my ex-students in this group already know about, has a saying that if people wanted you to write about them in a nicer way, they should have behaved better.
I recite that to myself on a daily
but
basis.
I think at the same time that is in itself problematic because you shouldn't write with the aim to defame people.
Right.
I think that comes across as just a mean book,
yeah.
right? So anyway, let me just kind of ask the rest of the team whether writing about actual people had any consequences for you. Did you get any pushback from any, you know, historians or anyone else?
Well, I'll say for my books, I don't tend to write about like real people in like a one-to-one correlation. I kind of like use real people as like starting points for like fictional characters. And that's mostly because I just don't want to be like beholden to like somebody's actual life. That feels like a large burden that I'm not quite prepared to undertake. I want to be able to have the flexibility to like move the plot the way that I want to move it. So no, I haven't had anybody like reach out like upset, but mm-hmm. I also kind of disguise, protect myself a little bit from that happening.
All right. How about the Wright Brothers legacy or anyone else? Yeah.
Not really. I haven't had any negative pushback. I think I got one email about my Emily Dickinson mysteries that someone was upset that I didn't say that she played the piano. It was not pertinent to the murder mystery, so I left it out. So, every once in a while, being writers, we'll get emails like that where they're just kind of like these teeny little thing that someone fixates on.
Yeah.
But other than that, no. I mean, there are no descendants of the Dickinsons. All of her siblings, there's no descendants. And then there are descendants of the Wrights of Catherine and Wilbur and Orville's two older brothers. And mm-hmm. I've not heard a peep from them. So nope. We will see.
Yeah, maybe soon. And did you have anything to add? Yeah.
I'm kind of with Sarah. I never kind of do a one-to-one. I think there is a responsibility, especially if a lot of people are reading it, then you become the storyteller of someone else's life. And I think it can be done beautifully and done very well. But for me, I prefer kind of fictionalizing them and then dropping real people like into scenes where you get like, you know, I don't know. I have the head of the Monuments Men who went over to create the depot to return the books. He was awesome. He like rode around Europe in a Jeep and like went to these castles and found books like in the cellars, and he was just so cool. And so to be able to kind of just drop his name like a little bit, almost, yeah, name dropping.
Like a little cameo.
Yeah, a cameo.
Like, yeah.
And then I have another character, her name is Lucy, and she's not based on a real person, but there mm-hmm. was a real person named Lucy, and who did all of this work. She saved a lot of the books from the Yiddish Institute that like exists to protect Yiddish language. And I was like, I have to make this character so badass, even though I didn't name it after her one-to-one. I was just like, I just want her to be so cool and kind of represent this other Lucy. So there's little things like that, but I don't necessarily, I'm inspired by like real events, but I don't necessarily put real people in.
All right, yeah, that sounds fair enough. I think some of the people must be in this room because they're kind of writing historical fiction or sort of a memoir, maybe like what you've done. So my next question has to do with research, which very much underpins a lot of historical fiction. Do you find yourself going down like the rabbit hole and not coming out like I do? Or what has been your experience of research? And do you have any tips for people who are writing historical fiction right now?
I mean, I'll say I feel like it's helpful to do research separate from the drafting process, because it can be so easy to get like caught up in like the minutia of history, which I think if you're writing historical fiction, it's because you love the minutia, but you also want to like have characters and like a plot. People generally like that in books. So I find it really helpful to like do a ton of research before I start writing, and then like write a draft. And then this is what I'm doing now for my third book. I'm like in the kind of editing process and doing a lot of research as I'm editing. So then I can kind of go through and be like, oh, I just like read about this. I can like liven up this scene with some of these details, but I wasn't thinking about them as much when I was writing the first draft of the book.
All right.
I would say the same. Like, I do a lot of research ahead of time, and then also when I'm writing, and probably with the two of you two, I'll get stopped by a word because I'm like, oh, yeah, was that there in 1903?
Yep.
Multiple times a day. Yeah, so I'll do like an asterisk or something that I can find in the manuscript so that I'll come, because I don't want to stop, go search for that word, and next thing I know, 5 hours is later because I has passed because I like decided to find the origin of the word, and then the first person who ever spoke the word, and then it just gets out of control.
Oh, yes.
So, like she said, in the editing process, I'll go back and I'll actually look up those things kind of separately. So it's kind of like homework left over.
I really don't know how people wrote historical fiction before Google. Because every day I'm like, did telephones exist?
Yes, right?
Like the stupidest things that I know that, but I have to look it up.
Etymology.
Yes.
I like to, I think what's really cool in the digital age is we have a lot of firsthand resources digitized. And mm-hmm. so there are interviews from, one of the parts of my plot involves like this anti-fascist movement in Germany in 1930s and like these young people who protested Hitler Youth. And, there's interviews from them, there's memoirs and stuff. And I think they're a good example of when you do use firsthand examples to remember that, like, humans wrote this, and we're very flawed, especially our memories, because there's multiple memoirs that exist from these people, and they kind of contradict each other in small ways. Of course, none of the big stuff. Like, no one's lying or, like, you know, exaggerating or anything. It's just details get, like, messed up a little bit. And so I think it's good. It's fantastic to be able to use firsthand sources, but it's also just good to keep in mind, like, there are people who are writing them. And that's actually kind of cool. It adds to the factor of it.
Yeah.
So when I'm researching, I call my mom and ask, when did this happen? I love that I'm like the black sheep up here right now. I think for me, I am grateful that I took as many photos as I did.
Right.
Because if I'm having like a difficult time sort of like filling or like I tend to work best when I'm out in the desert. So if I'm inside trying to write something, I have all of my photos that can really just like pull me back to the moment. And one of my favorite things that I got to research and learn much more about in writing my first book and my second book was, you know, I used to walk around the desert and be like, cactus, lizard, bird. But then I got to know, I got a book of flora and fauna because I wanted to sort of, there's only so many times you can say tree before, you know, so that was sort of fun. And then I started getting all these little books on like tracking and so it was like a fun little side endeavor to get to know the space that I live in and the space that I was writing about better.
Did you journal like before you?
No. I have never
ever
kept a journal. Mm-hmm. If anyone ever got a hold of my notes app, I would die. My books are written in my notes app, usually when I'm like wandering around, and then when I get to my computer, I will copy everything from my notes app into my document and just kind of build on it from there. It's very chaotic, and that's why it takes 2 years, I guess.
All right. Let's move on to another fun fact about when you put a book out into the world, then people receive it in different ways. Mm-hmm. And, you spoke a little bit, Amanda, about how somebody complained about, you know, not playing the piano. I frequently get things like, the names are too weird. So, you know, I mean, very often how a book is received is very interesting. So since your books are all out very, very recently, right? Mm-hmm. Do you want to talk a little bit about whether you've been surprised by how it's received or one of your favorite reactions from a reader or something that just, you know, just was different in some way?
I think my favorite reaction that I ever received was someone came to a book signing and told me that they mailed my book to their mom, and that she had told her that it helped her to understand her better, and the decision she made, why she moved away, why she lived the way that she did, and so she was like, you said all of the things that I wanted to be able to explain to my parents but couldn't. And so that's, I mean, in writing memoir, like that's the goal, right? Yeah. Is sort of like, I tell these stories because I don't want to feel alone in them. And so when people sort of reciprocate that, it's just the best feeling ever, especially when you agonize over what details to include. Mm-hmm. And if you're writing a memoir, if you're going to tell the truth about other people, you have to tell the truth about yourself. Mm-hmm. And
Absolutely.
The truth is not always flattering. So it's scary.
It
you
is.
Know, in my second book, I wrote about the darkest time in my life, and so putting that out there was really intimidating, and people just accepted it with open arms, because I don't think anyone just likes a hero of a story that has no complications,
right.
that has
mm-hmm.
It's boring, it's not real, and so I think it's intimidating to include those ugly parts, but that's kind of what makes it so human, and makes people be able
Absolutely.
To connect with it.
Yeah. Yeah, true. And writing a memoir or anything that's like a memoir is just making yourself vulnerable on a world stage. And thank you for doing that.
I usually describe it as I bleed for a living.
Right. Yeah, anyone else? Something that you would like to share? Yeah.
No, I was just going to say I'm not going to follow that.
Okay, all right.
I will. Well, Amanda's over there like, I've written 500 books. I'm like, I'm just going to scooch out the door.
I think the nicest feedback I've ever gotten was from one of my friends. She said, as I was reading this book, I forgot my friend wrote it because I was engrossed in the story.
Yeah.
And that was really sweet. And then the other compliment I got was my mom said, I think your grandmother would have liked the first book, but she wouldn't have liked the second one. And I took that as a compliment.
I think because I write, I kill people for a living, but I write mysteries that kind of end with a lot of hope, and the bad guy or the culprit always gets their comeuppance, and justice is always served. So a lot of people have told me that my books comfort them. So I've gotten a lot. I've had people come to see me like I was in the hospital, and I was listening or reading your book, and it helped me kind of forget where I was. So those are the most precious compliments to me.
That's lovely. Yeah, no, it is nice, having your book out into the world, and mm-hmm. just no matter what feedback you get, it's just wonderful to connect. Yeah, I think.
Absolutely.
It's great. All right, so I'm going to start with the person who wrote 505 books. You are all very successful writers, but I would just like to ask you, like, you're also obviously very effective storytellers, I can tell from the way you're talking in the panel, but some of the audience is maybe getting started on their path mm-hmm. to publication. Is there something that you would like to sort of suggest or give them some piece of wisdom on, starting when you are doing your very first book? If you can remember that far, Amanda.
Every book, if you can ask my husband, it makes me cry because I still feel I don't know how to do it. But I would say there's no right way to write. Mm-hmm. So just get into the chair and start. So if you are an outliner, you outline. If you don't outline and you just sit down and write by the seat of your pants, do that too. Mm-hmm. So don't get bogged down in thinking that I went to 1,000 workshops and 900 conferences and this person told me to write like this and that person told me to write like that. Any way you get the words on the page is how to write for you.
That's very wise. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I'll add to that I think it can change by project. Like one project will you're like, oh, I need to outline this really detailed. Mm-hmm. And then some projects you just kind of get in the flow of it and you're just kind of drafting it as you go. So don't be afraid of, what worked for one book might not necessarily work for another book. Don't get so locked into one process that you kind of close yourself off to discovering new things.
I think my two pieces of advice would be to, one, just be curious about the world. I often get asked where my ideas come from, and it's often just magpie-like situation. I'm in a museum, or I'm traveling, or I'm reading a book, or listening to a podcast, and I just grab hold of an idea. And I think to do that, some people try to just be like, I want to find an idea. And it's more just being curious about the world. And I think that really helps you as a storyteller to just consume all sorts of media because it will give you ideas for future books. And then my second is kind of practical, which is do your research. And I don't mean for historical fiction. I mean for the industry. I think I follow a lot of agents and editorial people, and they all kind of say, I'm getting queries for genres I don't even represent. And I think that could really help if you just do a little bit of basic research for who is going to be interested in your manuscript, who's going to be interested in your genre, where your book fits on the bookshelf. That kind of stuff is not as fun as the storytelling aspect, but it will really set you up for success above a lot of people.
I think I struggle with such serious imposter syndrome, even sitting here right now. And so I got so, when I first started writing my first book, I got so caught up in there has to be a specific way to do this. So let me Google, like, how did Mary Carr write her book? Like, and but that's just never going to be. Every author you meet has a little something different. I have never been the type to sit down, like, just in front of a blank page and start going. I need my notes from out in the wild. Right. And so my biggest piece of advice is people are always like, how do I start? The word count is so daunting. And if you just, every time you have a little thought, if you write that, pretty soon you're like really on your way, like more so than you think you would be. And so it doesn't have to, like I remember thinking when I first started my book that I had to start from like sentence one. On a cold January night I was born. Like, but like it's just, it's I love that you said it's different for each book. Yeah, I think just not comparing yourself to any other writer's process, because writing in and of itself is such an unique, sometimes deeply isolating job.
That is so true. And yes, absolutely what you said. I think, you know, one of the things that I've also found about my own writing is that you just got to keep doing it, especially when you're working on a novel length piece of work. You can write a short story at one sitting, you really can. You can also do a poem, but for a novel, you just got to kind of keep at it. Don't give up. All right. I don't think we have too much time for too many questions, but I just wanted you all to kind of speak to this. Do you have any upcoming projects that deal with like real people and writing about them? Is there something interesting you're working on right now? I'm sure you are.
My first Emily Dickinson mystery is called Because I Could Not Stop for Death, and it won the Agatha Award, and it was nominated for an Edgar. The second one came out last year, and the third one will come out in February, and it's called I Died for Beauty. These are all first lines of Dickinson, which luckily she has the word I in some kind of dying situation in a lot of her poems, so that works out for me. So that would be, and then the Catherine Wright series is at least going to be three books, so... Not They Who Soar, book two, set at the St. Louis World's Fair in 1904, will come out next fall.
Are you constantly on the road, like, you know, talking about your books? I'm just like, you are just so amazingly prolific. So I'm just wondering.
I have been on the road lately, and I was telling my husband this is my last event for 15 weeks. I get to be home 15 weeks. I'm so excited.
All right. I don't know whether to be envious or like just I don't know how you do it. It's so exhausting as well.
It is.
Isn't
I'm
it?
Looking yeah. forward to being home.
Yes, Sarah.
Sure. So my third book, I'm working on revisions right now. It's called Last Stop Union Station, I think. We'll see. And it's set, it's another World War II old Hollywood flavored mystery set on the Hollywood Victory Caravan, which was a real thing where a bunch of movie stars, in real life it was like 50, but that was way too many characters. So in the book it's like 12. get on a train and they go around the country to perform and sell war bonds and raise money for the war effort during World War II. And like with the last book, I went, and then what if somebody died? So that's what I'm working on at the moment.
I'm working on another historical about this librarian who created a boxcar library to take books to miners in 1920s Montana. And so that's kind of a theme that I have running through all three historicals is the importance of books to connect us and to bring light into the dark. And so, yeah, so, and then that's one storyline, and then the other is about the New Deal. The murals get a lot of attention for the New Deal, but it was also a writer's project that employed writers across the country, which would be really cool right now. and they wrote guidebooks for all the states, so those kind of stories intertwine.
I am working on my third book, which I just heard someone go, yes. Thank you for that. Which right now, I mean, like things can always sort of change. It's in the very, very early stages, but it's a collection of short stories, which is kind of cool because when you write memoir, it's, you know, a lot of it, it ends up just being sort of chronological.
Yeah.
And so I have a lot of little topics that I've always wanted to talk about but haven't really found a space for them in terms of just like the flow of my memoirs. So lots of little things. I've always wanted to write, not a whole book, obviously, but about the choice to not have children. I think that's kind of something that people like to see or are looking for more like representation in nowadays. And so, yeah, little topics like that. Yeah. Hopefully no one dies in it.
Oh, that's brilliant. So we have time for some more. Yeah. Okay. I'm actually also very curious, like, you know, when I'm going around these kind of festival circuits, about how people were impacted by the pandemic and how it affected their writing. And I'm sure a lot of people who are in this room have been writing through the pandemic or not. So can I just get your take on that? Like, did it help your writing? Did you find yourself absolutely unable to write? Or what happened when you were writing about, you know, real stories and just stuck in your lonely room?
I mean, I'll start because I had an interesting experience. I lost my job right at the beginning of the pandemic, so I had a lot of free time, and I was getting unemployment, and I was like, great, I can write. And I wrote a whole book, and then I read it, and it was interesting. I think there was like a lot like going on emotionally at that time. So I was very productive, but not like usable stuff. So that was interesting.
All right. Anyone else? Yeah.
I sort of a similar experience, but I was at the time had a day job and was working at a healthcare news organization, and so I was inundated with COVID news every single day, and I would just open all these stories that were like, and she touched the urn of her husband that she brought COVID home to, who died, and like this was just so. Every day. And then my sister worked in the ER. So it was a very emotional time. And I wrote a whole book and then I deleted it. Because I was like, this isn't working.
We are not doing good. Well.
And then after that, I kind of felt like that was the purge almost. And then I was able to move on and be productive. But it was hard because you were stuck in your apartment, but you had so many emotions going on that it was just, you're not just, oh, I have a free day or I don't have to go meet somebody and take all this time away from writing. It was difficult for sure.
Yeah, that sounds absolutely brutal for you.
And I was on deadline, so it was like, I had a contract due and I was like, oh no, I can't, no, 50,000 words gone. I was like, I can't do it. But then it started flowing again, so it was fine. But
all right, Brienne, how
are
you?
Yeah, when the pandemic was happening is sort of when I was going through a lot of the events that I wrote about in my second book. It really added to the overall sense of doom. I think I was so sad at the time, and it just felt like everything was just sad and scary, and I felt like that actually allowed me to sort of like lean in and like channel sort of that, like do something with the sadness and with like the dark sort of. So yeah, I mean, not to say that it was good, but it just, I think it would have been very hard to write about this time in my life if like everybody was thriving and I was just falling apart. And so, yeah, I think there was something about just the chaos of things that made me feel like, you know what, screw it. I'm just going to say what I'm going to say.
Okay, well, you are on a 3-month deadline, so you have no choice. You just push
yeah,
it out.
Yeah, yeah. I do. It's honestly, I don't have a choice. You know, what changed is I didn't travel, so I was doing a lot of Zoom programs and that sort of thing, and I really missed things like this where you connect with readers in person.
Right.
Zoom is very different, and sometimes, just like a funny story, sometimes the program director, usually they were with libraries, and sometimes they turn off the cameras for the audience, and sometimes they don't. So I had this presentation about probably, I also write Amish cozy mysteries that are kind of humorous and light. So I was talking about the Amish and this lady was just chowing on a drumstick. and I was so, and she kept making noise, so her head popped up all the time. It was early days when people didn't know how to mute. And I was just like, I could not focus. I would say the word like buggy 40 to 5 times because I was just like, there she goes again. She's very hungry.
Yeah. All right. I just want to do a very quick last takeaway from all of you because I know that Noelle is kind of, you know, telling me time's up, time's up. Very quickly, tell me one key takeaway that you would give the audience about writing about real people.
So I do write about real people, and they're the main characters, actual real humans. So what I really pay attention to is I put them where they physically were on that date. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sending Emily Dickinson to California, or I'm not sending, that would be great. I'm not sending Catherine Wright to, you know, China or anything like that. Because these people were so prolific in letter writing, which we don't have anymore, I know where they were physically, so I can research that place and kind of honor that. Well, maybe they did find a dead body there.
You're right. Okay, Sarah.
One thing that you'll want to think about if you go the route that me and Bree do, kind of inspired by a real person, is I always have to think about, does the real person also exist in this fictional universe? And that was not something that I had prepared for when I was writing my second book, and then being can I still reference this person if I'm having another character be inspired by, if I have a character inspired by Judy Garland, does Judy Garland still exist in this world? So it's an interesting thing to think about. I don't really have an answer or advice other than just, think about it.
I mean, I think that's my takeaway too, just think about. I mean, there's just so many things to think about when you're writing about real people. And just the power of storytelling is so powerful, as we all know. Propaganda, how easy it is to convince someone of something just by a well-written pamphlet or something like that. And so just having the idea that you are responsible for a real person's representation in your work and how powerful your own words can be to shape people's perception of that person, I think just knowing that and going into that writing experience with that is really important.
Thank you. And Bree, yes.
other Bree. I will keep it quick and circle back here. Yeah. I think my advice is from the lovely Anne Lamott, which is you own everything that happened to you. Yes. Tell your stories. If people wanted you to write warmly about them, they should have behaved better.
All right, let's give them a big hand. And you can...
Thank you for listening to this episode of the AWM Author Talks podcast. Be sure to subscribe so you are notified when new episodes are released. Now go, be inspired, and find the mind of a writer in yourself.